It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I am announcing today that the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal. In a few moments, I will sign a presidential memorandum to begin reinstating U.S. nuclear sanctions on the Iranian regime. We will be instituting the highest level of economic sanction. Any nation that helps Iran in its quest for nuclear weapons could also be strongly sanctioned by the United States. America will not be held hostage to nuclear blackmail. We will not allow American cities to be threatened with destruction. And we will not allow a regime that chants death to America to gain access to the most deadly weapons on earth.
That was President Donald Trump yesterday announcing that he will, in fact, withdraw us. In fact, he signed the paper right there for all to see to withdraw us from the disastrous deal with Iran. This is Sandy Rios in the morning. It was an amazing speech, an amazing moment. Claire Lopez, who you often hear on this with me, who was a CIA analyst for a number of years, is in Israel right now. She talked to us yesterday online, and she sent this. She is with Judge Jeanine and a few other people who you might recognize who are doing this tour of Israel, you know, with us, with intelligence and military forces. And she said they're on Israel's northern border last night, and they were with a soon-to-be-retired IAF general who flew helicopters for 32 years. And they were with him just as the president made his announcement. The room exploded in cheers. That'll give you an idea of the significance of that decision. And last night, Robert Bartlett, who's a veteran whose half of his face was blown off by an Iranian IED, had this to say on Martha McCollum's show. Let's listen.
We know what he did with the money. He began spreading more terror. That's why there was some uprising, because the money wasn't going to them. You know, it was try to spend some money to try to fix something, you know, to buy them off, you know, so they wouldn't build a weapon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I really appreciate it. It's a great anniversary for me. I mean, 13 years ago last Thursday, we got blown up. I was cut in half in the left corner of my temple down through my jaw. My gunner, Todd Bishop, lost his legs. My truck commander, God rest his soul, Sergeant Brooks, William Brooks, was killed instantly. And this new adventure of mine started, you know, to do the right thing, to continue to try to protect the country.
All right. That was, again, Robert Bartlett. There's so much to say, but honestly, what I want to do here is play the president's statements to you yesterday, because it was such a powerful, he spoke for 10 minutes. I'm going to try to get as much in of this that I can. Here's how it started.
My fellow Americans, today I want to update the world on our efforts to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. The Iranian regime is the leading state sponsor of terror. It exports dangerous missiles, fuels conflicts across the Middle East, and supports terrorist proxies and militias such as Hezbollah, Hamas, the Taliban, and Al-Qaeda. Over the years, Iran and its proxies have bombed American embassies and military installations, murdered hundreds of American service members, and kidnapped, imprisoned, and tortured American citizens. The Iranian regime has funded its long reign of chaos and terror by plundering the wealth of its own people. No action taken by the regime has been more dangerous than its pursuit of nuclear weapons and the means of delivering them. In 2015, the previous administration joined with other nations in a deal regarding Iran's nuclear program. This agreement was known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. In theory, the so-called Iran deal was supposed to protect the United States and our allies from the lunacy of an Iranian nuclear bomb, a weapon that will only endanger the survival of the Iranian regime. In fact, the deal allowed Iran to continue enriching uranium and, over time, reach the brink of a nuclear breakout. The deal lifted crippling economic sanctions on Iran in exchange for very weak limits on the regime's nuclear activity and no limits at all on its other malign behavior, including its sinister activities in Syria, Yemen, and other places all around the world.
He went on to say this, talking about what the Iran deal actually did and what Israel found out. Let's listen.
At the point when the United States had maximum leverage, this disastrous deal gave this regime, and it's a regime of great terror, many billions of dollars, some of it in actual cash. A great embarrassment to me as a citizen and to all citizens of the United States. A constructive deal could easily have been struck at the time, but it wasn't. At the heart of the Iran deal was a giant fiction that a murderous regime desired only a peaceful nuclear energy program. Today, we have definitive proof that this Iranian promise was a lie. Last week, Israel published intelligence documents, long concealed by Iran, conclusively showing the Iranian regime and its history of pursuing nuclear weapons. The fact is, this was a horrible, one-sided deal that should have never, ever been made. It didn't bring calm, it didn't bring peace, and it never will. In the years since the deal was reached, Iran's military budget has grown by almost 40%, while its economy is doing very badly. After the sanctions were lifted, the dictatorship used its new funds to build nuclear-capable missiles, support terrorism, and cause havoc throughout the Middle East and beyond. The agreement was so poorly negotiated that even if Iran fully complies, the regime can still be on the verge of a nuclear breakout in just a short period of time.
And I want you to hear all of this because the president goes on to explain in detail things that we knew and tried to warn about, and that Bob Corker and Cardin, Senator Cardin, insisted on the morning Sunday shows this was going to save us from the Iranians. And so they saved the deal, Bob Corker from Tennessee. But let's listen to the president describe further what a disaster it's been.
Deal sunset provisions are totally unacceptable. If I allowed this deal to stand, there would soon be a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. Everyone would want their weapons ready by the time Iran had theirs. Making matters worse, the deal's inspection provisions lack adequate mechanisms to prevent, detect, and punish cheating, and don't even have the unqualified right to inspect many important locations, including military facilities. Not only does the deal fail to halt Iran's nuclear ambitions, but it also fails to address the regime's development of ballistic missiles that could deliver nuclear warheads. Finally, the deal does nothing to constrain Iran's destabilizing activities, including its support for terrorism. Since the agreement, Iran's bloody ambitions have grown only more brazen. In light of these glaring flaws, I announced last October that the Iran deal must either be renegotiated or terminated. 3 months later, on January 12th, I repeated these conditions. I made clear that if the deal could not be fixed, the United States would no longer be a party to the agreement. Over the past few months, we have engaged extensively with our allies and partners around the world, including France, Germany, and the United Kingdom. We have also consulted with our friends from across the Middle East. We are unified in our understanding of the threat and in our conviction that Iran must never acquire a nuclear weapon. After these consultations, it is clear to me that we cannot prevent an Iranian nuclear bomb under the decaying and rotten structure of the current agreement. The Iran deal is defective at its core. If we do nothing, we know exactly what will happen. In just a short period of time, the world's leading state sponsor of terror will be on the cusp of acquiring the world's most dangerous weapons.
All right, at that point, he then makes his announcement we started the show with, and so therefore, I am withdrawing. We are withdrawing from this deal. We are withdrawing. I'm going to sign the paper right now. And then he goes on to talk about what Pompeo is going to be doing in North Korea and how this relates. Let's listen.
Today's action sends a critical message. The United States no longer makes empty threats. When I make promises, I keep them. In fact, at this very moment, Secretary Pompeo is on his way to North Korea in preparation for my upcoming meeting with Kim Jong-un. Plans are being made, relationships are building. Hopefully, a deal will happen, and with the help of China, South Korea, and Japan, a future of great prosperity and security can be achieved for everyone. As we exit the Iran deal, we will be working with our allies to find a real, comprehensive, and lasting solution to the Iranian nuclear threat. This will include efforts to eliminate the threat of Iran's ballistic missile program, to stop its terrorist activities worldwide, and to block its menacing activity across the Middle East. In the meantime, powerful sanctions will go into full effect. If the regime continues its nuclear aspirations, it will have bigger problems than it has ever had before.
That was the President of the United States speaking so powerfully. You know, understated, not bloviating, not braggadocious, but humbly, but forcefully. I will keep my promises. We will withdraw. We will impose harsh sanctions. And if other people continue to build up Iran financially, there may be penalties for them. I mean, just no nonsense, bottom line talk the way it should be, the way presidents have not done in decades. It's amazing. The history of our relationship with Iran in the last 40 years or so is just disgraceful. And I want you to hear more about it. So I've asked Ken Timmerman, who was an Iranian expert. He goes back to the Iranian hostage era. That's when Ken started writing about Iran. And he's going to give us some perspective about what this means, which, you know, we'll talk together about that. But the president covered a lot of the bases about what's been happening with this deal. How could the president, as in Obama, ever have signed a deal like this? How could he have done that? How could he have done that? This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, now I've heard that sometimes germs evolve. Is this true?
Chris, this is a common claim that some germs acquire the ability to infect certain new species, or maybe they become resistant to drugs. But this is not evolution. In fact, it's really devolution, the loss of ability or the loss of genes to accomplish a certain purpose. A recent study showed that the whooping cough bacteria lost a certain suite of genes, which caused the animal host immune system not to recognize it. Now a new animal can be infected, but is this evolution? What happens here is the loss of genes, not the gain of genes as evolution needs. What results is death, not life. While it doesn't fit the evolution view, it does fit the creation followed by the fall and the curse view, and that's the back to Genesis view.
Thanks for tuning in to Back to Genesis.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
New York City is in the throes of an opioid epidemic, as is much of the nation. But instead of cracking down on drug usage, Mayor Bill de Blasio wants to enable drug users. The city unveiled a new plan to open what they're calling safe drug shooting centers. That's right, the mayor wants to use public tax dollars to provide a safe place for drug addicts to use illegal narcotics. It's left-wing lunacy. Drug counselors will be on hand to offer users advice on how to get clean, but that's suspect at best, not to mention a possible violation of federal drug laws. The Justice Department is on record that a similar plan in Vermont was a violation of the law. Federal prosecutors say it's not only a crime to use illicit drugs, but it's also illegal to maintain sites where drugs are used. In other words, Mayor Bill de Blasio might want to find out if he can use taxpayer money for bail. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Finally, I want to deliver a message to the long-suffering people of Iran. The people of America stand with you. It has now been almost 40 years since this dictatorship seized power and took a proud nation hostage. Most of Iran's 80 million citizens have sadly never known an Iran that prospered in peace with its neighbors and commanded the admiration of the world. But the future of Iran belongs to its people. They are the rightful heirs to a rich culture and an ancient land, and they deserve a nation that does justice to their dreams, honor to their history, and glory to God. Iran's leaders will naturally say that they refuse to negotiate a new deal. They refuse, and that's fine. I'd probably say the same thing if I was in their position. But the fact is, they are going to want to make a new and lasting deal, one that benefits all of Iran and the Iranian people. When they do, I am ready, willing, and able. Great things can happen for Iran, and great things can happen for the peace and stability that we all want in the Middle East. There has been enough suffering, death, and destruction. Let it end now. Thank you. God bless you. Thank you.
And that's the way the president ended his speech yesterday. I wanted you to hear it all, and now you have. And it's worth listening to and repeating, because this is a moment in history. Mark this in the line. It's been decades since anyone really stood up to the bullies of the Middle East, and they are bullies. The Islamists are bullies, and once they're faced off, they back down. Well, Iran's not breaking, backing down today. They're burning American flags in their parliament, but we'll see if that's long term. They always have to bluster, but they usually stand down when strength is demonstrated. We'll see about that. President Trump certainly demonstrated strength yesterday. Ken Timmerman joins me, and I'm excited about it because Ken is an Iranian expert. He and I have been friends for a long time because I've heard him speak about this issue, but I don't think my listeners are familiar with you, Ken. Let me just say that Ken was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for the work he has done to expose Iran's nuclear weapons program. Also, there's a documentary, Iranium, that talks about this and talks about Ken's work. He's one of half a dozen true experts on the Islamic Republic of Iran in the U.S. today. He regularly meets with Iranian dissidents overseas, lectures on Iran at the Pentagon's Counterintelligence Training Academy. I could go on and on, but let me just say that Ken started following, as far as I understand, the Iranian situation back in the hostage crisis before the Reagan years when Jimmy Carter was president. And in fact, in 1982, he was taken hostage by Palestinian guerrilla fighters in West Beirut. And actually, that's where he came to Christ. He follows Christian persecution in the Middle East. And we could go on and on, but then Ken wouldn't have a chance to actually talk to us. Ken, good morning, and thanks for joining me.
Well, good morning, Sandy. Thank you for that very gracious introduction.
Well, you deserve it, Ken. And so I'm really, really excited to talk to you because I just about came out of my seat yesterday when the president made his announcement. I wasn't really surprised, but boy, the meat that he put on the bones of that was just something to behold from my perspective. What were your thoughts?
Absolutely right, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. He did this exactly right. He did it with the right tone, with the right substance, and what he said to the people of Iran at the end, which you just played here for our listeners, was tremendously impactful and resonates inside Iran. It resonates with Iranians who live overseas, who have been living for the past 40 years in a constant state of regret. They know that they have a great culture, a great country, and they've seen it dragged down into the mud by the mullahs who are ruling there and have been really exercising a reign of terror for the past 40 years. So it was in tone, it was right, in substance, it was right, and this is a step that will make America safer, both in the short term and in the long term.
And the world. You know, Ken, Iranian parliament then burned a flag. While we were sleeping yesterday, they were burning our flag in their parliament. And, of course, they had all kinds of snarky things to say. Trump tears apart the nuclear deal. It's time to set it afire. The president of the United States made some silly and superficial comments, said Khamenei. He maybe made more than 10 lies in his comments and goes on and on and on. So their response to this decision of President Trump tells us what about them?
Well, don't listen to their words. Watch their actions. I'm going to tell you and tell our listeners something that they might not be aware of. The Iranian regime is terrified today. They are shaking in their boots. All this stuff that you've seen, that's just bluster. They are absolutely terrified. When President Trump said, if you restart your nuclear program, bad things are going to happen to you, much worse than you could possibly imagine. They are listening to that, and they see what he has done when he has made threats like that in the past. This president has actually carried them out. Remember, during the hostage crisis from 1979, on November 4th, I remember it was my birthday, on November 4th, 1979, up until the hostages were released on Inauguration Day, 1981. Why were they released on the day that Ronald Reagan was inaugurated? In fact, at the very minute that he swore the oath of office, the hostages left Iranian airspace. It was because they believed Ronald Reagan would actually carry out his words, his threats. They did not believe Jimmy Carter, and they were right. So Donald Trump has credibility with the Iranian regime. He has credibility with terrorists around the world. They know that he will carry out those threats. He doesn't make idle threats. When he makes a threat, he will carry it out. They are scared.
Ken, I want to ask you some pointed questions. The president, even in his remarks yesterday, was pretty actually sort of kind, from my perspective, to the Obama administration, while telling about how horrible the deal was and how they gave him $1.5 billion, even in cash, in the middle of the night, you know, on some sort of transport, just an exchange in the middle of the night, just disgraceful. But the question sort of insinuated that President Obama just and his people just really didn't comprehend. They thought this would really work, that Iran would, you know, dismantle their nuclear weapons. They just really thought this was going to work. Do you agree they just thought it really was going to work, or was there something else at play?
No, I don't agree that they really thought it was going to work, but I understand what Donald Trump is saying, and I think this president has grown so much in office, it is phenomenal. You see that in his faith. And I believe his sincere and his deep faith. This is not somebody you would have said 10 or 15 years ago was a man of faith. I think today you have to say this is a man of faith. His faith is powerful. It informs everything that he does. He's changed in office. So why should he blast Obama when he doesn't have to? His actions, again, speak for themselves. This was a terrible deal. He said it was a terrible deal. He explained why it was a bad deal. The Iranians, as I wrote recently at Fox News and on their opinion page, the Iranians entered into the deal with a series of lies. They entered into the deal in bad faith. The deal was based on a lie. You cannot have a deal that's based on a lie. It was abrogated from the minute that it began. And Obama and John Kerry, they knew that. They knew that. And their line today is that, well, we understood that the Iranians were going to lie, but this is the only alternative to war. That's essentially what their argument comes down to. And frankly, that's just a bunch of poppycock. Of course there are other alternatives between this bad deal that allows Iran, puts them on a glide path to nuclear weapons in 10 years, between this deal and war. And we're going to see those alternatives play out here in the next couple of months.
You know what went through my mind, and I can say this, I will say this, happily say this, when we found in the Holy Land Foundation the Muslim Brotherhood template for destroying the United States, it said they would destroy our miserable house from within. Now, to be clear, the Iranian Muslims, the mullahs, are not Sunni. They're not Muslim Brotherhood. But it did remind me of how, if in fact someone had managed to infiltrate the highest levels of government in the United States, they could not come up with a more wonderful bill to actually exact and bring disaster on us. Would you agree with at least the last part of it about the bill?
Oh, I would, and let me tell you exactly why. I can spell this out for you and for our listeners. The Europeans themselves, as this deal was being finalized in between April and July of 2015, were aghast at the behavior of John Kerry and of his delegation. They said, wait a second, they're not behaving as negotiators for the United States. They're negotiating for the Iranians. John Kerry was negotiating on behalf of the Iranians with the Europeans and the Russians. It was absolutely outrageous. You do not have a negotiation when there's only one side making concessions, and that side was the United States. So you could not, Iran, the Iranian regime could not have gotten a more beneficial deal, one which glossed over their previous military, their nuclear weapons activities, one which put them on the glide path to a future arsenal of nuclear weapons than the one John Kerry gave them. And at every single point, there were breaking points during the negotiation where Kerry thought he had a deal. The Iranian foreign minister said, wait a second, I've got to go back and consult to Tehran. He goes and talks to the Supreme Leader. The Supreme Leader says, he gave you what? And Javad Zarif explained all the concessions the American made. And the Supreme Leader then gets back to him and says, well, wait a second, if he gave you that, let's ask him for more. And this happens two or three times. In one of my lectures, Sandy, I put up a slide, and I said, Google this. Go to images www.google.com and Google this phrase, how not to buy a carpet. And when you Googled that phrase back in 2015, it came up with a picture of John Kerry and at that negotiating table with the Iranians. No joke.
Oh, I believe you. You know, the other little factoid in this is that, as I recall, John Kerry's daughter married an Iranian connected to either the Sarnoff or connected to people that John Kerry was negotiating with. So that's just a little factoid. But the other thing that I wish I had the ability this morning, Ken, to create a montage of the number of times that Bob Corker, Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee, went on television and assured the American people as he was pushing his Ben Cardin amendment to save this deal that this was going to make us safer. This was just this deal was wonderful. It was going to make the world safer. He said it repeatedly. I'd just like your thoughts about that.
I am so glad that Senator Corker is retiring this year, and he will be replaced by a true conservative, Marsha Blackburn, as the U.S. Senator from the great state of Tennessee.
All right. So before you joined us, Ken, I played the entire speech of President Trump because I wanted people to hear. I thought what he said was thick with great information that they may not know. You and I knew this. And I don't think that anybody in the Senate did not know what he said, but they pretended like they didn't. And it wasn't part of American DNA to know what a horrible thing we were getting ourselves into. But at the last part there, the president turned his remarks to the Iranian people. And you've already alluded to how they have suffered. My question is, do you think they're going to hear what he said to them? Will that get through to them? Will they hear that?
Well, yes, they will, and they will hear it through Instagram, through Telegram, through online sites. They may or may not get it through Voice of America. There have been a lot of problems with pro-Iranian regime people at Voice of America and Radio Free Europe, but they will get it through the Internet and through other means. Yes, they will. You've seen protests all across Iran, and these protests have erupted because of the incompetence of the leadership, because of the economic failures, and because they're fed up with the dictatorship. President Trump has basically said to the people of Iran, we are with you, and they've heard that. I think you're going to see more protests. I think you're going to see a tougher regime crackdown. I think you could see Iranian missile attacks upon Israel, by the way. That could happen today as we speak. Bibi Netanyahu is in Moscow. He has a very good relationship with Putin, and he's going there to say to Vladimir Putin, look, we would really appreciate your restraining hand on the Iranians in Syria to keep them from openly attacking us. The Russians already have shot down. This is not very widely known, Sandy. The Russians in Syria shot down three Iranian drones, armed drones, that were on a flight path into Israel. This is after the Israeli Air Force shot down one of them before. So this Netanyahu-Putin relationship is very important. They're going to try to get the Russians to restrain the Iranians because the Iranians are going to threaten Israel. They're going to try to launch a barrage of missiles against northern Israel to show that the Iranian leadership is still relevant.
Hey, Ken, I don't want to surprise you here, but are you able to stay with me for one more segment? Ken? Hello?
I just lost you.
Oh, can you hear me now? Wow. All right. Well, listen, we'll try to reestablish that connection. And while we do that, I guess that'll be the answer. Join us for the next segment, at least for part of it. Because the thing I want Ken to do is to talk to us about, I want him to talk about the Iranian hostage situation and give us a little bit of history on Iran, because I'm not confident that Americans really understand that, because as all the reasons we always give, probably didn't learn it in school, they aren't old enough to remember, and these are important things to understand. Also, I want to talk to Ken about what Iran is doing, like in the Southern Hemisphere, in South America, and the damage they're doing in Syria and in Yemen. It's shocking, really, when you understand the damage, the great terrorist country that it is, and how it has propagated so much death and destruction. Really, certainly for Americans, and attempting to do it worldwide. And that was because Barack Obama gave them so much money. But of course, he didn't really know. It was innocent, right? He didn't mean to do it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
In later times, some will depart from the faith by devoting themselves to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Grace Cathedral Episcopal Church in San Francisco hosted its first ever Beyoncé Mass. Instead of the 50 people they'd usually have for a Wednesday night service, this Beyoncé mess drew over 750 attendees. They replaced worship songs and hymns with songs from the canon of Beyoncé and Destiny's Child. The church meeting centered on an artist whose music is profane, sexually explicit, and who's admitted that her body is taken over by a spirit named Sasha Fierce when she performs.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
Friendships is an all-volunteer ministry, helping the needy in the U.S. and abroad. There's an opportunity for you to care for Syrian war victims at Friendships Medical Field Clinic and Base in the Golan Heights. Among the positions available are doctors, nurses, dentists, interpreters, as well as personnel for operating the facility. For details, visit friendships.org or call 337-433-5022. Again, 337-433-5022.
Since the day the American Family Association began asking you to sign a petition urging the cancellation of 13 Reasons Why, Netflix has made some changes. They've added disclaimers before episodes and even a link to a suicide prevention hotline number. This is progress, but it's not enough. If you have signed the petition, thank you. If you haven't, please do. Netflix continues to ignore our request for a meeting to discuss the dangers of their show. And they're still going forward with the release of season 2 of this dangerous program. Too many teens have taken their own lives after watching 13 Reasons Why, a program which seems to suggest suicide as a viable option. Your signature and prayers could help convince Netflix to reconsider their social responsibility. Even one more teen suicide would be infinitely too many. Please read and sign the Netflix petition at afa.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. He did it! Yes, folks, President Trump rejected the advice of feckless European allies and appeasers in this country and withdrew the United States yesterday from the fraudulent Obama bomb deal with Iran. Of course, that's not the end of the challenge we will face from the mullahs and their proxies like Hezbollah. Tehran is threatening harsh retaliation, even as officials in France, Germany, and Britain insist their nations will continue to observe the agreement and otherwise do business with and help prop up the dangerous Sharia supremacist regime in Tehran. But Mr. Trump's action makes clear that the Iranian threat is actually growing, not contained. Henceforth, those enabling it will be exposed, and the Ayatollahs will be denied the veneer of legitimacy they've used to oppress the people of Iran, whose liberation is our best chance actually to end that threat. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You know, there was a lot of speculation last night from the left. Oh, what is this going to do to Kim Jong-un and those talks? He's going to see that we don't keep our word when we make these deals. Are you kidding me? Kim Jong-un is rushing to denuclearize his country. He even actually made a statement with the Chinese president a few days ago that he's going to denuclearize. That is a miracle. It's because someone is sitting in the Oval Office who will keep his word on these things and is expressing the firm commitment to protecting Americans that we have been longing for in a president for so many decades. We are talking with Ken Timmerman. And by the way, just as a programming note, I'm going to get to the election results in just a few minutes. I know you're wondering why in the world I haven't mentioned it. It's because I've been focused on this huge deal that happened yesterday. Getting us out of the Iran deal was a major, major development. So that's why we're devoting so much time to it. Ken is the Iranian expert that I want. I have a few more questions for you, Ken. Thank you for hanging on for a minute here.
My pleasure.
Hey, listen, I just, please, just I want a little history lesson, brief, but you know as well as I do, there are tons of people listening who have no idea what you're talking about. When you say the Iranian hostages, they don't know the history of Iran. And so if you could just give us a tutorial as you were teaching, you know, high school students or even their parents who don't really understand our history with Iran, could you do that, please?
Well, okay. We have to go back to the Shah. For several decades, Iran was governed by an enlightened monarch. He was blasted by the left, by human rights organizations. They said his secret service was torturing and murdering people. Amnesty International actually went back historically, looked at 35 years of the Shah's rule. There were maybe 300 extrajudicial killings over 35 years. Not great, but not at all the dictator that they had painted him to be. He was overthrown by Khomeini and these radical mullahs. In the very first days that they took over, they executed over 3,000 senior military officers. In the first 2 years, they murdered 100,000 Iranians to cement their rule. So we had this really dark era, this dark regime takeover. And to cement their rule, they invaded the U.S. Embassy in Tehran on November 4th, 1979, took our diplomats hostage, paraded this all over the television. You had a new network TV show called Nightline with Ted Koppel every night bringing you for a half an hour the latest news horrors from the hostage takers that showed that America can do nothing. That was the phrase that Khomeini used again and again. America can do nothing. He showed that Iran was powerful, that the mullahs were powerful in Iran, that America was powerless to do anything about it, and every single night this is on American television. The Iranians finally released the hostages, as we said in the last segment, the very second that Ronald Reagan swore the oath of office as President of the United States, because they understood America was back and America could do something. Donald Trump has had the same impact on the Iranian regime. He has shown them, in fact, America is back. We are powerful. We have means of diplomacy and economic suasion to use against them. The sanctions that the president spoke about in his speech will have a very dramatic impact once again on the Iranian economy. They have swallowed up the $150 billion of sanctions relief, Sandy, a lot of it going into the private coffers of Iranian leaders. It has not gone into the economy. The Iranian people know that, and they are going to hold this regime accountable.
Let me just interject, Ken, to paint a picture. Iran, before the mullahs, was a free, like a, I would say more like Turkey, were westernized, where women were educated and sophisticated. Not that that's a... But, I mean, they were educated, and they were doing professional things. And so when the mullahs came in and jerked them all back into the 7th century... It was terrible, and it's been horrible for Christians. We all know about the American pastor who was in prison, and Barack Obama did nothing about that. I mean, and of course, he's just one person of many, many stories. So Christians have suffered, along with others, political dissidents in Iran. It's been a nightmare for the people, an absolute nightmare. But Ken,
go ahead. Yes, and you're right to mention Christian pastors, and there are still Christian pastors, by the way, Sandy, who are imprisoned in Iran. The regime has waged a war against the house church movement, which has spread like wildfire all across the country.
So that's kind of that's a great overview, because I want people to understand what the country, if they can, as best they can. Now, but the last thing I want to talk to you about, again, briefly, Ken, and I'm going to let you go, is Iran. I don't think people understand. The president alluded to it. But Iran has done so much destruction, causing the death of American military when we were fighting fiercely in the Middle East, the IEDs, supporting our enemies, supporting terrorism. But they've also morphed into an entity in South America, right on our borders. Can you sort of address that for a second?
Well, they have. They have been a close ally with Venezuela. They have set up missile factories in Venezuela, probably have missile bases there as well. They operate in that tri-border region to infiltrate Hezbollah members into the United States, illegal aliens, again, crossing where there is no border wall. The Iranians operate worldwide. This is something that people don't understand. The regime operates worldwide. In the 90s and the 2000s, they had an intelligence war going on with Saudi Arabia. They were killing each other's spies from Bangkok all the way to Washington, D.C. So this regime has global aspirations. They believe that their jihadi view, their view of Sharia supremacy, is a worldwide government, and they believe that anyone who does not adopt their version of Islam should be killed, basically, and subjugated. So that's what we are facing. We are facing a regime that is a supremacist regime. And I've got to tell you, Sandy, I want to get back just for a second to the Christians of Iran and the Christians of Iraq who are suffering today as we speak. My new book coming out in July is called ISIS Begins, and it's the story of an Iraqi Christian family. But you'll see also the tie-in between the Iranian regime and ISIS at the beginning. This is, again, one of these stories in the Middle East that people don't understand very well. The Iranians, who are Shia Muslims, will cooperate with radical Sunni jihadi Muslims, whether it be al-Qaeda or, in this case, ISIS, if it serves their greater interest, which is the domination of Islam over the world. And that's something that we need to understand as Americans. We are really fighting. We are part of a global war. And this global war has been declared against us. And it was declared on the 4th of November, 1979, in Iran by the Ayatollah, even before 9/11.
So this was this thing that the president did yesterday. I just want people to understand how important what he did was. And last but not least is the cells that are actually operating here in the United States. And you just wrote last week or earlier this week about a dissident who was actually attacked and attempted murder on a bus in New York City. Just tell that story just briefly, then I'm going to say goodbye to you.
Yeah, well, this was just on May Day. A prominent Iranian dissident, a labor leader, was attacked on his way into New York City for an interview. They threw some kind of acid or chemical weapon at his face. He's horribly disfigured. You can access that piece either at frontpagemag.com or through my website, kentimmerman.com. And this is the first time the Iranians have attempted the assassination of a dissident in the United States since 1981. I say to all of my friends in Europe, where they have never really worried too much about killing dissidents, they need to take additional security precautions now.
Ken, great. Listen, I so appreciate your expertise this morning. And when you get that new book out, we'll be talking. We're going to put your article also on our Facebook page about the dissident who was just killed so that people can read and also link to your website. Okay.
Thank you so much. God bless, Sandy. Thank
you. All right, Ken Timmerman, thank you so much. I appreciate you so much. All right, so there you go. Now, you've had a great tutorial on Iran, and I hope that you can share that. And you know that we always post our shows on Facebook, and we also, they're available if you just Google Sandy Rios in the Morning Podcasts, so that you can listen and you can share them with friends so that they can hear information, because we do give you information that you might not get other places. And so just would encourage that. Now, I want to talk about the races last night because it was a big deal, actually. From my perspective, it was a good night, I have to say. In West Virginia, the victor was Patrick Morrissey. He was the U.S. State's attorney. And, of course, the other two were Evan Jenkins and Don Blankenship. I liked Don Blankenship. He's the coal miner owner, a wealthy businessman who just was in prison. And he made a very compelling case about how the Obama administration went after him and put him in prison for just a regulation violation. And he also went after Mitch McConnell in a powerful way. He's very West Virginia, so he's blunt and not, you know, polished in his delivery, but I liked him. Evan Jenkins was the establishment candidate from the word go, and he got a lot of money from the establishment. But Patrick Morrissey was supported by Mike Lee and Ted Cruz, Senate Conservatives Fund, and others. Can't remember all the lists, but he is actually a very good candidate, and he has a good record in West Virginia. So he did prevail on that race over the establishment candidate, Evan Jenkins. And Don Blankenship didn't win. I hope Don can go over into something else. You know, I online came to my attention last night that Mitch McConnell, who Don Blankenship went after in his commercials, sent out, I don't know if it was a tweet or some kind of a meme today, of him smirking, meaning Mitch McConnell smirking. And it just, the line is, thanks for playing, Don, because... all right. There must be some breaking news because Fred has joined us in the studio. Fred, what's going on?
All right. Well, you know, it has to be bad news for the mainstream media when they are praising Donald Trump. But the New York Times and other media outlets just announcing that our Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is in the air on his way back from North Korea with the three American hostages on board.
Wow. I mean, that's just amazing, Fred. I swear, it's just amazing. You know, I know this is not the news, man, but I just feel like God is really at work. Listen, Donald Trump has a lot of gifts and abilities. There's no question about it. He's uniquely crafted for this moment, but this is God's work.
Oh,
all of these things coming down, this is God's work. I could just see it.
Absolutely. They're in the air. The president tweeting out just a few moments ago that they are apparently in good shape. We understand the plane with our Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and these three hostages will likely arrive in Washington around 2 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow morning. And the president has already said he plans to be at the airport to greet them.
So. Fred, are these all three? I can't recall. Are they all three pastors?
I'm not sure. I just know they're American prisoners. They're all citizens of Korean descent. They're American citizens of Korean descent.
Well, I just know that when I was in North Korea, those are the people, Americans of Korean descent, who were on the border helping the refugees and telling them about Jesus. I was with them. It's just incredible what's happening.
Yeah.
And so I'm suspecting that, and we'll see if that's confirmed. Is that everything, Fred?
That is everything. Just wanted our listeners to know that. We'll give you more details in the newscast coming up.
Oh, thank you so much, Fred. That's just great news. Thank you.
Amen.
Yeah. All right. I want to go back to these races, if I can. In Indiana, Mike Braun beat both of the Rhino congressmen, Rokita and Luke Messer. I just think that's amazing. I was looking up his statements last night. He's pro-life, very much pro-family. He's for immigration enforcement. I mean, really, he seems like a great candidate. Jim Rokita won in Ohio. I think Mike Gibbons was the conservative candidate that many people preferred after Josh Mandel dropped out. But Jim Rokita has a pretty decent record himself, so that's not a bad outcome either. And in North Carolina, Mark Harris, Pastor Mark Harris, who was our guest yesterday, has indeed beat incumbent Pettinger. Can't think of his first name. Sorry, I'm making notes here. But Mark Harris won, and of course, he is just solid to the core on every issue, from the moral issues to the fiscal issues to the immigration issues, and he will be part of the Freedom Caucus. Now, this is the primary. Of course, he has to defeat the Democrat, but that's a Democrat. As I recall, it's a Republican plus six districts, so he should do well. So last night, Mitch McConnell's kind of preening, but honestly, hardly any Mitch McConnell candidates won last night. In fact, anti-McConnell candidates got 55% of the vote in one of the... which race is that? In West Virginia. So he really doesn't have a reason to preen, even though I'm sure he will. But just so you know. All right, it's a really good day. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.